Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Jill Robbins, and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will continue our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Sales of costly homes have been booming in the Middle Eastern city of Dubai during the coronavirus health crisis. People from Europe and the United States have been moving to the city, which is one of the United Arab Emirates. They say it is because the city follows a business-as-usual policy. Christophe Reich is a wealthy French businessman who lived in London for nearly 30 years. But when Britain put in place restrictions because of COVID-19, he decided it was time to leave. In Dubai, he said, the plan for dealing with the virus is simple. Let's make sure everyone's vaccinated and keep everything open. Of course, that attracts people like me, he said. The UAE is mainly using a vaccine from China to protect people from the virus. The country has a population of about 9 million and has provided over 10 million vaccine doses so far. Other vaccines from Pfizer and AstraZeneca are also available. Dubai reopened to tourists last summer. It had a sharp increase in virus cases in January, but unlike some countries, not very many people in the UAE died. The country used to be a place for rich people from the Middle East and Africa. Now, people are coming from places like China, Russia, India, and Europe. One reason is that it is easy to get vaccinated. Reich was able to get an appointment for the Pfizer vaccine as soon as he arrived. In London, the waiting list was 4 months long. It is also easy for foreigners to get permission to live in the UAE. The country is offering visas for people who are able to work using the internet. In the past, some Westerners worried about moving to Dubai because of its Islamic laws. But recently, the country changed its rules to permit people from other parts of the world to observe some of their own laws and traditions. For example, it used to be illegal for men and women who were not married to live together. These changes made some people think about moving to Dubai, a busy city with beaches, bars, restaurants, and tall buildings on the Persian Gulf. In March, a home in one of the city's rich neighborhoods was sold to a family from Switzerland for over $30 million. Less costly homes are being bought at record rates. 90 homes worth over $2 million changed hands in April. But there are some signs that the housing boom is ending. Prices for space in the Burj Khalifa, the world's tallest building, have fallen nearly 70% from their height in 2013. Prices are falling in other buildings, too. Home sales experts say there are now too many places to live in Dubai. Jackie Johns is a home sales expert. She said, The boom time can run too quickly, and it all falls apart. Matthew Cook works for a business that sells costly homes. He said, "People are buying without thinking too much about the future." Robert Mogilnicki studies the Middle East at the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington, D.C. He said, "A property boom does not usually hurt rich people. If the market changes, they are in a good position. The people who lose out are on the lower end," Mogilnicki said. I'm Dan Friedel.
Working as a teacher was Bill Mathis's top goal. It was his dream job. But he quit his job at a school near Detroit in the state of Michigan last August. His school district was returning to in-person classes. But Mathis said he did not feel like it was safe enough. He was especially worried about his wife, who has the disease lupus. "What about us and our families?" he asked school officials. The 29-year-old teacher felt few in the community understood his concerns. "Good riddance," one person told him. His story is just one showing the struggles of American government workers, known as public servants. Jobs like teaching, firefighting, policing, government, and social work have offered people the chance to give back to their communities. These jobs often earn good pay and benefits. Opinion studies show public support for medical caregivers and teachers. After the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, firefighters had strong support. But many public servants no longer feel like they have the support of their communities. Many are overworked and feel very tired in systems that do not have enough workers. There is a shortage of teachers in Michigan and many other states. In cities like New York, Cincinnati, and Seattle, there are not enough police. Many of these workers suffer from mental health problems, addiction, and even suicide, especially among first responders. Before the coronavirus health crisis, researchers found in 2018 that about half of American public servants said they were extremely tired or burned out. That is compared with 20% of workers in all fields. Adding to the problem, few young people work in public service careers. The Partnership for Public Service is a nonprofit organization that supports effective government. Their research shows that just 6% of people in public service jobs are younger than age 30. And about 45% are older than 50. The pandemic has only intensified that situation. Elizabeth Linos is a behavioral scientist at the University of California, Berkeley, who studies public workers. The workload is up. "Financial security is down," she said. Linos's research includes 911 emergency operators, doctors, and others. She said studies during the pandemic have found that anxiety rates for frontline workers are 20 times higher than usual. "I've really never seen anything like it," she said. During the 2008 Great Recession, feelings against labor unions became common. Once, Detroit had been an area of strong support for labor unions. But some people in Detroit blamed labor organizations for troubles in the auto industry. That feeling has grown to include unions that represent public servants, including teachers. Tim Deegan is from Waterford, Michigan. He manages a pizza restaurant. They protect bad behavior and they punish good behavior, he said of unions. He said he has no union protections for a job where he often works 60 hours a week. Deegan took part in a social media discussion about Michigan teachers who were retiring early. He said that online teaching has been poor and that teachers have phoned it in or have not cared for years. Mathis said he was thanked early on in the pandemic by tired parents who were forced to teach their children at home. This time last year, we were heroes, he said. Now, not so much. Derek Lies, a father of two, said he supported the teachers at first, but when the union argued against returning to in-person learning, my sympathy went away, he said. Sue Ziel is a teacher in Mathis's district and a union leader. Why were we the enemy? She said. You can't love a teacher and hate a union because it's the same thing. Kevin Edmond is the fire chief of Sterling Heights, Michigan. He said his department is making more of an effort to address problems of mental health and addiction. Edmond says he gives time off to employees who respond to deadly fires and other serious events. Edmond has been a firefighter for 35 years. He said younger workers are more open to the department's mental health and support programs. When I first started, there wasn't such a thing. It was basically, you'll get over it, he said. Unfortunately, because of our profession, we see a lot of bad things. The number of workers in the fire department has remained the same since the mid-1990s. However, the department now makes more than three times as many calls. Bringing young people to public service jobs can be difficult. Linos, the UC Berkeley researcher, said today's young people are finding other ways to do good and make more money doing it. She said that both the private and nonprofit fields have used their own message of public service to attract workers. They are saying, come change the world. I'm Jill Robbins.
Scientists say NASA's most distant exploring spacecraft has recorded what they describe as humming beyond our solar system. A new study suggests the continuous hum detected by the Voyager 1 spacecraft is caused by waves existing in interstellar space. Voyager 1 left our solar system 8 years ago, crossing the border that divides our solar system from interstellar space. Interstellar means between stars. Scientists say interstellar space begins where the sun's continual flow of material and its magnetic field stop. Researchers say instruments on Voyager 1 identified the waves as vibrations in small amounts of gas found in the near emptiness of interstellar space. The vibrations are also known as plasma waves. The spacecraft detected the waves over several years at different radio frequencies. Results from Voyager 1's findings were recently published in a study appearing in Nature Astronomy. Astronomers believe the space that Voyager 1 is passing through, known as the interstellar medium, is filled with different kinds of waves, both big and small. Such waves can provide information about the density of the interstellar medium. The new research was led by Stella Ocker, a doctoral student at New York's Cornell University and a member of NASA's Voyager 1 team. She was able to make the discovery by examining data slowly sent back by Voyager 1 from about 23 billion kilometers away. Ocker told Reuters the newly identified plasma waves would be far too weak to be heard with the human ear. If we could hear the hum, it would sound like a single steady note, playing constantly but changing very slightly over time. When the plasma waves are changed to an audio signal, the tone of the sound changes, added James Cordes. He is an astronomy professor at Cornell University and the co-writer of the study. "That sound is a bit eerie," he said. NASA said in a statement, "The new discovery may be the first continuous measurement of the density of material in interstellar space." Ocker added, "This detection offers us a new way to measure the density of interstellar space and opens up a new pathway for us to explore the structure of the very nearby interstellar medium." In the past, Voyager 1 had detected more powerful wave movements in interstellar gas linked to flares from the sun. But the new study suggests that continuous vibrations unrelated to solar activity could be normal in interstellar space. The researchers said the findings provide evidence that there is more low-level activity in interstellar gas than scientists had thought. Ocker said her work can lead to a better understanding of how the interstellar medium interacts with solar wind, the continuous flow of charged particles released by the sun. It can also provide data about how the heliosphere, a protective bubble for our solar system, is shaped and changed by interstellar conditions. Voyager 1 was launched in 1977 along with another NASA spacecraft, Voyager 2. Both spacecraft were designed to explore Jupiter and Saturn. Voyager 1 entered interstellar space in 2012 and is still actively collecting and sending data. In 2019, NASA reported that Voyager 2 had also discovered new details about interstellar space. The two Voyagers were expected to last only 5 years. Both long outlasted their operational lifetimes, but are expected to run out of power and go silent within 5 years. However, Cordes said new spacecraft are already being designed and developed with the goal of traveling even farther beyond our solar system. That is the message I find appealing. Our reach is expanding into interstellar space, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
On our national parks journey, we travel to the southwestern state of Arizona. There, we find a strange and colorful landscape. Yellow, red, and even purple rocks and sand cover the hilly earth. Huge pieces of ancient trees twist in unusual ways. The area is the only national park that includes a part of the historic U.S. Route 66. Welcome to the Petrified Forest National Park.
The word forest may mislead visitors. The park is in a desert, and the word petrified, which can mean afraid, may scare visitors away. But fear not. Petrified Forest gets its name from the trees that have, over millions of years, turned to stone. That natural process is called fossilization. Much of the Petrified Forest formed from tall trees called conifers. They grew over 200 million years ago near waterways. During floods, water forced the trees up from the ground. Over time, the wood from the trees became petrified.
The Petrified Forest National Park is one of the wonders of Arizona. It sits within the Painted Desert. A Spanish explorer in the 1500s gave the place its name. It is easy to see why. The desert looks like an artist's canvas. Brilliantly colored mudstones and clays cover the land as far as the eye can see. They contain bentonite, a clay that is the product of changed volcanic ash. The oldest geological formations in the park are about 227 million years old. Differently colored formations show different time periods. The Blue Mesa formations, for example, have thick bands of gray, purple, blue, and green mudstones. They are about 220 million years old.
Evidence of humans in the Petrified Forest dates back 13,000 years. People first came here after the last ice age. Early Paleo-Indian groups used the petrified wood to create different kinds of stone tools. They used them to hunt large animals. The climate warmed over several thousand years. Humans began building villages here and growing food, such as corn, squash, and beans. In the 900s, people in the area began building above-ground houses called pueblos. They also made pottery for cooking and other uses. Scientists today find evidence of early pottery and Pueblo homes all over Petrified Forest National Park.
A long and severe drought in the early 1400s forced most of the people living here to move. But new groups soon arrived. European explorers came in the 1500s. By the 1800s, American pioneers began settling in the area. And by the 1920s, American motorists were traveling on U.S. Route 66. The road winds through the heart of the Painted Desert. Long before humans entered the area, though, dinosaurs dominated. Petrified Forest National Park is a world-class area for fossil research. The fossil record at the park preserves some of the earliest dinosaurs. The dinosaur fossils are from the late Triassic period, called the Dawn of the Dinosaurs. They help scientists reconstruct ancient environments.
The land here was set aside as a national monument in 1906. Congress moved to protect it because of its unique ecosystem, record of human history, and dramatic southwestern scenery. It became a national park in 1962. More than 800,000 people visit the Petrified Forest National Park each year. The best way to explore the park is by foot. The National Park Service maintains many kilometers of walking trails. The Crystal Forest Trail is a 1 kilometer path. It is named for the crystals that can be seen on the pieces of petrified wood. The trail is one of the best chances to see this fossilized wood up close.
The Petrified Forest includes many shapes and sizes of wood, from large logs to stumps to the smallest remains of plants. Most of the petrified wood found in the park is made up of quartz. Quartz is a hard, colorless mineral. The wood sometimes shines in the sunlight as if covered by glitter.
The Painted Desert Rim Trail offers visitors a good chance to see the park's wildlife. Lizards and rabbits are common. So are snakes and foxes. Early morning or evening are the best times to see animals. These are also the times when the sun makes the Painted Desert the most colorful and spectacular. But whenever you choose to visit, the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert will awaken your senses and your curiosity about this ancient place. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.